My name is Jenny Troyer. Many of you know that. You know that I am Alan's wife. And I thought, well, introductions might be a good thing. Some of you might be going, well, who is Jenny Troyer? I know Alan. I've heard him. But who is this Jenny Troyer? And my maiden name was Rutler. My background is not plain, though I have come to appreciate your plain background and your plain heritage. So perhaps my perspective is a little different. And if I say some things that you kind of go, I'm not sure about this, might be because of my background. So give me a little grace, okay? I am the mother of five. The fifth one hasn't been introduced yet, but it is very obvious that I am the mother of five. And it has been an enjoyable journey. I waited. I was 29 when I got married. And I appreciated what Barbara Ann had to share about purity. When you have to wait longer, purity is a big thing. And in your youth, establishing those things of purity, those foundations of purity, benefit your marriage in a way that you have no idea until you're there. This is an exciting day for me, a day long anticipated, sometimes with knocking knees and a tummy that doesn't want to stay still. And yet I count it a privilege. It is a privilege to speak to you. It's a privilege to look in your faces and realize you're at crossroads in your life. You're at decisions. Some of them have been made. Some of them are still being made and decided on. I remember sitting in your seat. I remember being 16 and going to my first Bible school. I remember being amazed at some of the things I heard. Godly courtship was one of them. We had never heard of courtship before, or, you know, courtship sort of like, but not hands off. Not with the standard of purity. I remember those Bible schools changed my life in a way that I can only thank God for. And I was at crossroads too. Some choices I made were good and some I regret. And now it's changed around. I'm the one in the harness. I'm the one pulling. And I hope and I pray that my words are not my own, but God's. Integrity, when given this subject of integrity, I thought, oh boy, well, what does integrity mean? What is the definition of integrity? I like definitions, and I started pondering it, and so I went to my dictionary, and I looked up integrity, and all it said was completeness, and I thought, what? Okay, well, what am I going to pull out of that? And then Alan said, well, we want you to focus on honesty and truth. I thought, okay, integrity, honesty and truth, integrity and honesty and truth. And I realized integrity is like a diamond. Just a little illustration here. There's many facets to integrity. There's many things that, you know, as we consider, as we turn the diamond of integrity, there are many facets to it. All connected and yet distinctly their own. I've heard that a diamond has somewhere between 52 and 90, 98, 97 facets cut into it. And that's kind of how integrity is. It's kind of how it, there are so many facets to it that we can't cover them all. But we'd like to just look at a few here. Examine them, consider them, and yet realize that they all are connected. Now, as I said before, the topic that was given to me was honesty and true, and we find that in Philippians 4. Let's see, 4:8. you've heard this passage a few times. Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things. Now, as I said before, I like definitions. They define and they clarify things. They just set them apart. They help you to focus in. And so, as I said, I went to my dictionary. And I thought, I want to know, what does honesty, what's the definition of honesty? What's the definition of true? And so I went to a modern day dictionary. This is what the modern day dictionary says. Free from deceptions. Truthful. Genuine. Real. Credible. Marked by integrity. And I thought, well, that fits. That's great. But words have a way of changing throughout time. So I thought, well, that's the modern day definition. Is the definition different 100, 200 years ago? So I went to the 1828. That dictionary definition says upright, just, fair in dealing with others, free from trickishness and fraud, acting and having the disposition to act at all times according to justice or correct moral principles. And these are the definitions for honesty. We'll get to true later. What I like about definitions is they're solid. I kind of think of them as stones, you know, your foundation stones. Christ is our foundation. But then we think, okay, he's using these words. Let's put our foundation stones down on our foundation. And they're solid. That's what we want to do. We want a solid foundation so that our building of integrity is solid. Our understanding is solid. Now, the second part of this message is going to be what I call living stones. Stones to live by. We have our foundation and we have our foundation stones. But then we're going to change it a little. We're going to turn and we're going to go, okay, what's practical? How do we practically apply this to our life? Now, after the 1828 definition, I thought, okay, that's what our world defines honesty as. How does the Bible define honesty? What is its definition? Because sometimes a world's definition, such as marriage or purity, is different from the Bible definition of the same thing. I was kind of surprised in this passage, Philippians 4:8, the definition for honesty, the word used there is the only one used for honesty. In the this definition is what honesty is defined as in this verse. Venerable, that is honorable, grave, honest. Another one close to it, or one that it said, look this number up. After I had read that, was to revere, to adore, devout, religious, worship. I thought, well, that is interesting. It's a little different than what the dictionary said. And the first word used, venerable, I had always used it, and it was probably maybe a wrong way of using it, but I always thought old. When I heard of a venerable old man, I just thought old. But venerable means to venerate, to honor, to worship. And so honest has a meaning of worship to it. Whatever is worthy. And we know God is worthy, but also there are things that are worthy to think about, to meditate on. And there are things that are unworthy. And so again, I was surprised. There are other definitions to honest. I think Mickey, on Tuesday talked about an honest heart. And that definition means beautiful, chiefly beautiful, good, valuable, virtuous, better, fair, honest, meet, well, and worthy. An honest and good heart. Romans 12:17, provide things honest, has the same definition. Thank you. Second Corinthians 3:7 has the same definition. Now I pray that God that ye do not evil, not that we should appear approved, but that you should do that which is honest. 2 Peter 2:12 has that same definition of beautiful, having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. So it was interesting to me. Sometimes living honestly before, let us walk honestly as in the day, is decorously, decently, honestly. So honesty has many definitions. 5 definitions for just the word honesty. Each has a different facet. I mean, you could say honesty, you have it. 5 different facets, and yet it's all part of the same thing. Definitions of true. The modern dictionary says true is steadfast and loyal, agreeing with facts or reality, a true description. Constant, true expectations, or consistent, I'm sorry. Consistent, true expectations. Properly so-called true love, which I'm not so sure it's true love. Rightful, true and lawful king, conformable to a standard or pattern, also placed or formed accurately. True, accurately, true, reality, synonyms. Accurate, correct, right, true, factual, void, realistic, down to earth. True to life, bonafide, genuine, legitimate, real, true, natural, reliable, dependable, faithful, responsible, solid, sturdy, stalwart, trusty, trustworthy, tried and true. Those are some nice synonyms. I like those synonyms. So again, I went to the 1828 and I thought, okay, true. What does true mean? Back in 1828, what would they have defined true as? Conformable to fact. Being in accordance with the accurate state of things. Genuine. Pure. Real. Not counterfeit. Faithful. Loyal. Steady. Free from falsehood. Honest. Exact. Straight. Right. Not false. Nor pretended, rightful. Well, I thought those are all good definitions of true. So I thought, well, okay, well, what does the Bible say true is? True, not concealing. True, truly, truth. Pretty simple definition, not concealing. Another definition of true is truthfulness or honesty is communicating by life and word what is genuine and accurate. I had to think of that's what I want for my life. I want to communicate with my life as well as my words because it's not just your words, it's your life. You probably heard the quote, I can't hear what you're saying because you're living. That's kind of, that's it's very true. Our words are measured by our lives. And that's why integrity is so important. That's why building integrity in your life is so important. It's not personality. You can have a quiet personality. You can have a sober personality. You can have a flighty personality. But character is built. It's something that's learned. Some people say caught rather than taught. But it's also learned. Now, we're going to go on to our second part. We've laid some foundations. We've put some nice weighty stones down. Now we're going to go on. And for the second part, I'm going to ask you to participate with me. Some things to write on the board here. And what we're going to do, first of all, I'm going to warn you. I'm a terrible speller. So you may certainly laugh at my spelling. And I won't mind and I won't be offended. But we have three levels of honesty. And we're going to go like this, and I'm going to try not to trip over your feet. So excuse me if I step on them. Three of honesty / truth. Okay. The first level we're going to call spirit honesty. And I'm going to liken this. You've heard this illustration a lot. Spirit, soul, and body. And B-O-D-Y. Body. Now, I'd like to keep this positive. And so, at first I was thinking, well, body would be the lowest, but as a teacher and as a mom, my son in fourth grade is learning about correct comparison adjectives. So we're actually going to do it this way. We're going to say good, and this one's better, and this one's the best. Now, I've heard of good, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and that is definitely not what I'm trying to portray here today. But good, better, and best seem to fit it for me. And the spirit of honesty, let me look at my notes again, is God-focused. God, focus. Okay. Now, the soul, I'm not going to use a circle. I'm going to use a grid. I have some avid chess players at my house these days. And so I see this board a lot. And we're going to put here mind, will, and emotions. And the body is just the body. Mind, will, and emotions. Body will put action. This is the action. This is what comes from these other two. The mind, the soul, is our battlefield with mind, will, and emotions. Now, body is action. And the soul, we're going to also put down motive. Now, I'm going to ask for your participation. What is honesty at this level? At the action level. Saying the truth. Even if you don't feel like it. Anything else? Here's a question that might go with body. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? And then your soul kicks in. Your mind, will, and emotions start flipping through their catalog of things to say, well, what's wrong with that? Often, and I'm going to write that, what's wrong? W-R-O-N, wrong with that. Now, our spirit often will say, what's right with that? And the battle, our battlefield, is here. Sometimes we can say the spirit of the law or God's spirit. Now, can you give me some biblical definition, well, biblical examples of action, body action? Just the doing of honesty. Who just did or acted honest? Any thoughts? There's no right and wrong answer. I'm going to let you go ahead. Joseph acted. He did. He acted. Joseph acted. Can I give you a surprising one? How about the Pharisees? Did they just act? Was there any soul or spirit in what they did? Jesus said, you tithe, you do the outward things, but you've missed a whole bunch more that is not honest. And that's my own paraphrase. Often, it's good. It's, action is good. Honesty at an action level is good. But we don't want it to stay there. We don't want honesty to just be an action. We want it to move into our mind and our will and our emotions, our motives. What are our motives for being honest? And they can either be related to what's wrong with that or what's right with that. Mind, will, and emotions play a big part in our life. It's where we decide things. Satan knows that and God knows that. It's our battlefield. I have been in Bible reading. It's been interesting. I have been in Chronicles. And when I started Chronicles, I wondered, what am I going to get out of Chronicles? But it's interesting to me. It seemed like over and over, if the kings, especially of Judah, kings of Israel, they were a pretty sorry lot. But the kings of Judah where I would often place them in the soul. Their mind, their will, and their emotions were engaged, and yet they were missing something. So I couldn't say it was just the two of these. And God, there were verses, and I didn't mark them. Not all of them. But there were things that God saw when they were focused on Him, where they had a perfect heart or a heart that was turned toward God and were honestly trying to do what they could to follow God and to the action of truth, the action of honesty. And yet, there was something still missing. But the battlefield was there. I had to think of the soul, believe it or not, I think Abraham was sometimes in this soul battlefield. There were times that he did what was right, that he was focused on God, and then there were times that he was not honest. And the thing that struck me, I was thinking about it one day, now why? He was a friend of God. But the one thing that he had trouble trusting God in was with his wife. Somehow he was able to trust him for a son. Somehow he was able to trust him for the land and all of that. But when it came to his wife, it was hard. He lied. It's a half lie, but it was still an untruth. And it was never confessed. He never confessed that. It surprised me. And so his children struggled with it. And it went on for generations. And unfortunately, in history, the Jews were known for being wily, for being deceitful. And it came from Abraham, because it wasn't confessed. That's why honesty is so important. God gives us grace. He gives us power to overcome. But it was never confessed, and so it stayed. The lying stayed. Now, spirit honesty. They said spirit of the law. There are a few that had spirit honesty, or that high, that best level of honesty. One of them was Joseph. And I had to think of this. When he was tempted, he didn't look at circumstances. He didn't look at the action and justify the action or use his mind, will, and emotions to overcome. What he told Potiphar's wife is, how can I sin against God? He was God-focused. It wasn't people-focused. It wasn't action-focused, but it was God-focused. He had the spirit of honesty. His focus was on God. This sin isn't just for my own pleasure. This action isn't just for my own pleasure. This action is not just because I'm giving into it. This action would be against God and would cut off my relationship with God. How can I sin against God? Another one that might surprise you is Abimelech. And we find that in Genesis, I have 23 through 7. And I want you to see this. This is actually Abimelech is a heathen king. 23. And God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, thou art but a dead man for this woman which thou hast taken, for she is a man's wife." But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, "Lord, wilt thou slay a righteous nation? Said he not unto me, 'She is my sister'? And she even herself said, 'He is my brother,' in the integrity of my heart." And innocency of my hands have I done this. And God said unto him in a dream, "Yea, I know that thou didst this in the integrity of thy heart. For I also withheld thee from sinning against her." That integrity is also honesty. In the honesty of my heart, I did this innocently. I wouldn't have done it if I had known. And here again, Joseph and Abimelech, they didn't have any of God's word. But somehow they had a vision of God. They realized that this was not a sin against people as much as it was a sin against God. And still, God put a conscience within each one of us. And the last person I have down for the spirit of honesty was David. Even though he did sin, even though he did those horrible things, when he came to himself, Psalm 51 is a psalm of repentance. And in verse 4, it says, "Against thee, thee only, have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight." He realized his relationship with God was compromised, and yet God said there are consequences. And it's true, there are. There are consequences when we sin. God does forgive. But David had some awful consequences, and it followed his family line. There again, Chronicles was, I kept noticing over and over, there was a desire for many wives in those kings, even though they had a heart for God. And it doesn't, it never seemed to be broken, really. And at that time, it was lawful. But often it seems that we fall into this better category with our mind, our will, and the emotions. And I find for myself, I'm often people-focused. What will they think of me if I tell them just really what I think? What will they think of me? And then you're in your battle. Okay, now we've brought some historical into the picture. We've looked at some examples of honesty. Good, better, and best. Now, I'd like to look at some examples in our own life, practical applications. First, our walk with God in quiet time. What would be quiet time action? What would be quiet time action? Okay? Bible reading and prayer, yes. The action of reading. Reading. That's right. But I won't ask for a raise of hands, but I sometimes find this in my own life, and I thought about writing up some cards and reading and holding cards up. You know how it is, you're reading away, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I wonder what we're going to have for breakfast. And you're still reading, and, well, I wonder what the day is going to be like. And you're still reading, and I wonder if it's going to go okay. And then you stop and you go, oh, what did I read? that sound familiar? Me too. Okay, the action was there. What did you get out of it? Okay. But you still had quiet time. I would probably say that I have to engage my mind, my will, and emotions and say, okay, for this next half hour, I'm going to set a watch over my mind, engage my will and my emotions in Bible reading so I can get something out of it. And when you fight that battle, it goes a step further to spirit. God can talk to your spirit when you're focused on His Word. Honesty can be part of that. Truth can flow to you. You can hear God's voice. But if it's just the action of reading, if it's just the action of quiet time, is it really quiet time? Prayer was mentioned. Now, there again, you can kneel down, you can have your quiet time, and you can pray, but there's different levels of prayer as well. I often think needs. Oh Lord, help me today. I need you. I need your grace. And it's all about me. It's all about my actions today. Or we can go to the soul of prayer and fight a battle. And it can be intercession. It can be praying for others. It can be labor, staying focused. Sometimes it helps to stand, which I have found from experience. And some of you have found from experience too. Sometimes it helps to walk while you pray, to stay focused. Because it is a battle. It is a battle to pray. It is a battle to intercede. But there's still another level to prayer. And that's worship. Sometimes prayer is being quiet. Sometimes prayer is connecting with God and letting Him speak to your spirit. Prayer is good. It can be better and it can be the best. It's all what we put into it. It's all what we're willing to go for. It's all what we're willing to honestly look at and follow. How about speaking the truth in our hearts? This is a big one for me. You know how it is. Some days are just rough. And somehow emotions get a hold of us with a big E. And there are times that you don't want to do the right thing. And I'll just be honest. Sometimes that's the way it is for me. And so, for me, the action would be saying, God, I am upset. I am having a hard day, and I do not like what's going on. And I tell God where I really am. But the problem is, I don't want to change. That is a problem. And God says, okay, well, thank you for telling me. And that's about as far as it goes. And I don't have grace. And the day gets rougher. I would probably say acknowledging the truth would be the next step for me. I would say, well, God, it's true I'm angry. It's true I'm upset. I want to do better. And God says, yes, that's good. You're acknowledging that there's a problem and it's you. And it goes just that far. And nothing happens. And then the day goes on and it gets worse. And I'm asking for help. But in my heart, I'm not being honest enough to say, I will choose to change. with your grace. The Spirit of speaking the truth in my heart could go like this, accepting God's judgment of where I'm at, where I am. And the grace to change and act upon it. There is a choice. You know, we can tell God, I don't like this. I do not like these circumstances. These circumstances are hard, but I'm going to keep on in my own way. And yes, it's honest. You're being honest. But the spirit of honesty says, God, this is where I am. Please change me and give me the grace to change. And acting on it. Choosing. So maybe you smile when you're just about ready to frown or get angry. Maybe you act in love and grace to somebody who hurt you. Takes integrity in our walk before other people. Our actions can seem very honest to everyone we meet. But what about our heart? What are we thinking in our heart? And what does God say about our heart? Is our heart pure, like we heard yesterday? Is it willing to give the benefit of the doubt, to look for the good, to focus on the good, to think of the good? In this, I don't want to take too many rabbit trails, but we ladies are subject to our emotions more than young men are. And our emotions can take us on some wild goose chases some days. And I'm the first one to admit it. But the key to destructive emotions, emotions that will tear you down, will tear other people down, is obedience. Is speaking the truth in your heart, honesty and obedience. If you can obey what God gives you, if you can obey the direction of your parents, if you can obey the words of Scripture, it will help conquer these destructive emotions that will destroy you, speaking the truth in our hearts. It's our greatest protection. Now, I'm going to ask for your help again, and your participation, because we're going to, again, get practical. Let's erase the board. And now, applications of truth and honesty. Honesty with our parents. I guess we don't need spirit, soul, and body. We'll just leave them up. What would be honesty with our parents? How would we relate to our parents in honesty? I guess I'll give you just a couple. A good way to relate to them is sharing. Share your heart. Tell them where you really are. Open. And if you're not living with parents, somebody in authority. Somebody that not just who you feel comfortable with, but somebody who has integrity, somebody that will give you wise counsel. And I would also encourage that would be an older sister in the church. Because of purity, I would not go to a brother, I would go to a sister. But one way, a good way, is sharing. maybe the wrong way, is hiding. There's a lot you can hide. I know it because I did it. I did it from my parents. I'd be struggling, and they kind of sensed I was struggling, and they weren't sure where the problem was, and you know, they'd poke and they'd poke and they'd try over here and try. No, I'm fine. I'm just fine. I'm acting all right. I'm fine. But hiding things is not honest. It's not honest, and it's not true. How about accountability? Staying accountable to them. And rather than shading the truth, and it's very easy to do that. You know, you can tell them a little bit. Well, where were you? Well, I went to the store. Well, what did you do at the store? Oh, I just got some things. Strictly truth. Yeah, you got some things. What did you get? Was it things they approved? Or, well, what did you do today? Oh, well, I went to Salvation Army and I got this sweater. What do you think of this sweater? You know, open, honest. The truth, but also honest. Do you have any ideas? Can you give me some ideas? What are ways that we can show honesty and truth to our parents? All right. That's a good one. Yep. Asking for correction. That's a good one. Instead of just waiting for it to happen. That is a good one. Or asking for counsel. That is a very good one. Any other thoughts? Any other thoughts? How about this one? Mom comes to you and she says, can you, straighten up the kitchen? And you go, okay. So you wash the dishes. Well, that's straightening the kitchen. But then you go upstairs. Maybe the job isn't done just how Mom thought it might be done. But honesty, integrity might be washing the dishes, drying the dishes, wiping off the counters, sweeping the floor, and whatever else needs to be put away. Maybe that sounds like a long list. My poor sisters had me do that to them often enough. I would say, please come down and clean the kitchen. I need to do this. Well, they came down and they washed the dishes, but I came and it was like, wait a minute, this isn't done. Hey, come back here. That might not all be right, but that's how it was. Doing a job wholeheartedly, giving it all you can. And maybe that's a little bit on the in the left wing or the right wing, I don't know which. What about honoring curfew time? Maybe you have a curfew when your mom and dad ask you to be home, 10 o'clock, 9:30, 9. And so what time did you get home? Oh, around 9. Maybe it was 9:15, and it was 9 you were supposed to be home. Oh, around 10. Well, maybe it was around 10. Body. But the spirit of honesty would say, well, I was a little late. I'm sorry. Maybe there was a reason, and your parents are not, they're not ogres. They'll accept a reason. But if it happens over and over, is that honest and true? Or is it not? What about bedtime? Sometimes we have set bedtimes. And sometimes we have really good books. And, yeah, last night I had a really good book. And I kept thinking, discipline, discipline, discipline. You've got to get up and make breakfast tomorrow morning. Oh, this is so good. Okay, put it away. But I knew I had responsibilities the next day. And I like to read. I really like to read. And believe it or not, even though I'm a mom, I'm still accountable. And I have a husband that'll keep me accountable, and I really appreciate that. But even there, I have a choice to honesty and truth. Well, what time did you go to bed? Or when did you go to bed? Well, I didn't look at the clock. I'm not sure, but I know it was late. Oh, darling, you shouldn't have done that. You need your rest. Oh, yeah, I know I do. Sorry. How about treating mom and dad's things with respect? I know this can kind of be borderline too, left wing, right wing, but honesty, what if it breaks? Well, what happened to this? Well, I don't know. Well, do you know what happened to this? No, I don't know. Who broke this? Or where's my scissors? Has anybody seen my scissors? No, I haven't seen them. I used them. In your mind, you're thinking, I'm using them. I used them yesterday. I don't know if I put them away. Well, I don't know. I haven't seen them today. Honesty? Truth? No, you haven't seen them today, strictly. But is it still honest? It still does something inside here. With those that are the closest to us, we tend to be lax. I know I do. Those that are closest to us, we tend to be the most lax. Somehow honesty outside the family might be a little easier than honesty within the family. Now, how many of you have a job? Good many of you. How many of you have to punch a time card or keep your hours? Punch a time card. Keep your hours. Okay. That's good. I had a job too. I had a job, and we were to keep a time card. We didn't punch a clock. And it was interesting. It was very interesting. That we're on time. And there were those that were 5, 10 minutes late. We all got paid the same. There were those that were willing to do all that they could. Their employer was paying them. He was buying their time. And there were those that visited, and then they went and did a little bit over here, and then they visited, and, oh, a customer came in. Hi! But was that really what the boss was paying them for, was to be the greeter or the visitor? He was paying them for work. And at the store that I worked at, we basically kept our time by the half hour. What would you do if you worked 25 minutes? Could you write down a half an hour? How about 20 minutes? How about 15 minutes over? The sheet with the hours is right there. Were you going to require a half an hour's pay for 15 minutes of work? Or were you going to give that extra 15 minutes to your boss? Make him successful. Honesty, the spirit or soul or body level. Sometimes it just meant taking responsibility. They weren't always around to tell you what the next step was. You had to look around. So maybe it was a slow day at the bulk food store and you had all your bags done and you had all your shelves checked and you had everything. Well, what about the back? Could you clean up some shelves? Did you sweep under the table? Go look for something to do. Make that time profitable. Make it count for your employer. It's not about our success. It's about his success. Two stories. There was a girl that bought a tape set at a prominent store. And she was looking forward to listening to this tape set. And she pops the first tape in and it's quiet and a click. There's nothing on the tape. She pulled it out and she looked and, well, there's no brown stuff that the voices are recorded on. It's just leader tape. So she takes the tape set back and she goes up to the counter and she shows them what's wrong and she's expecting that they will take care of it and exchange the tape. Well, unfortunately, the manager came and goes, well, I can't do anything about that. That's tough luck. Y'all have to call the company. Really? And there was something in her heart that went, hold on. Where's the integrity? Where's standing behind your product? And it was like, okay. I guess that's the way it's going to be. But it surprised me. It was a Mennonite man. It was a Mennonite store. Somehow her money was greater than the integrity of that store. So every time she went in there, it was like, buyer beware. Check out your stuff good because there might be no refund. Make sure you have the right thing. Second story. And some of you might have heard this one. There was a grocery store, and there was a manager. And on this particular day, a little old lady came trotting in, and she wanted to see the manager. The manager came out and said, well, what can I do for you, ma'am? And she goes, I bought a ham here. And he goes, yes, I fed it to my dog. I goes, oh, the whole thing. Oh. The dog got sick, and he had to have his stomach pumped. And the manager goes, well, ma'am, what can we do? If we take care of this ham problem, can you take care of the vet's bill? And he goes, yes, that would just be perfect. Integrity preserved, even at the price of a ham, which is a small price, actually. I think that lady came into the store many times, just as happy as could be, knowing that her case was heard. And I hope her dog survived, though. I think the inordinate love of feeding a whole ham to a dog did more for it than the ham did. I would encourage you, serve your employer, not with eye service, not when he's watching, not when the boss is around, not when the manager's around. So also, serve your parents with honesty, with all your heart. I also got to manage a small cleaning business. And it is true, there is a difference in those that work for the money, and those that work for the success of the company, the success of the business. There have been those that clean bathrooms really well, and I'll tell you, I hate bathrooms, and somehow I have three in my house. And guess what? If they don't get clean, it's because I don't clean them. But there were girls that later on I checked the bathrooms when I went cleaning with them, and it was the little things. It was like lifting the seat up and making sure that it was clean underneath. It was looking in the corners. It was whether they picked up the cloth, set it aside, and dusted the whole table, or they just dusted it around the edge, and you pick it up and you go, oh! Integrity. Integrity in everyday jobs. It's not a little thing. It's not a little thing. Because it moves into every area of our life, our devotional life, our life at home. Someday, for most of you, life as a wife and a mother. You have to think of Proverbs 31, the heart of her husband doth safely trust in her. Right now is the time to learn. Right now is the time to practice integrity. Character is learned. It's not personality. You're not born with it. You learn it. Honesty and truth. What will it do for you? It will bring freedom. Honesty and truth does not fear darkness. You don't have to hide. You don't have to watch your back. You don't have to think, did I really say that or did I not say that? And saying is only part of it. Did I do that or did I not do that? When there is honesty and truth in the heart, it brings freedom. Some of you might be wondering, well, where are the sources of truth? If it's true that character is taught, if character is learned, where do I get truth? God is truth. Jesus is truth. The Holy Spirit is truth. Truth can, the world's definition of truth can change. It can. God's law is truth and the gospel is truth. And when you concentrate on those things, truth enters. Truth enters in. What does truth do? It brings us to Christ. I think each of us can think of a time when truth was hammering on our hearts, when it was saying, come, when it was showing us ourselves, it was showing us our sin. It brings us to Christ. Truth brings us to light. He that doeth the truth cometh to the light. Truth purifies our souls. Seeing ye have purified your souls in obeying the truth. Truth frees us. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Truth frees us by tearing down false ideas and conclusions that keep us in fear and bondage. Truth leads us in the right way. Truth allows us to worship. Truth cleanses us from iniquity. And truth preserves leaders. Mercy and truth preserves the king, and his throne is upholden by mercy. It is significant that the throne is not established by truth and justice, but truth and mercy. When people violate truth, it is natural to be harsh. It is natural to be harsh, but loyalty is built when a leader teaches truth and demonstrates qualities of kindness, gentleness, patience, meekness, and self-control. Therefore, we are instructed to speak the truth in love. Sometimes we can be zealous, and I fall in that category. You get so zealous for truth, you're going to tell them the truth. You're going to give it to them plain. But the Spirit isn't. There's not the spirit of kindness. It's not the spirit to restore, but just to broadside them. That never works out right. How can we learn truth? How can we learn? By filling our souls with truth. Receive with meekness the engrafted word that is able to save your souls. By studying the meaning of truth. Study. Read definitely, but study. Look up the meanings. Get those big old stones and put them out. And make them living stones. Make them stones to live by. By learning to answer with truth. Not what I think. What does the Bible think? What does God think? By walking in fellowship with others. We may think we have the truth. But if we can't walk in fellowship with others, 1 John 3:16 through 24 says, if we say that we have fellowship with Him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. And it goes both ways, fellowship with God, but also fellowship with others. If we cannot accept things from our sisters and our brothers, if we cannot accept correction, if we cannot accept redirection, it's not going to work out right. Are we really walking in truth? By designing good works. But mercy and truth shall be to them that devise good. Therefore, let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, and by testing the spirits. Sometimes something can sound really good, but there's a check in here that says, something's not right. And I remember times I'd come to Mom and I'd say, Mom, this is what they said. She goes, no, that doesn't seem right. What about what God's Word says on this? I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. But it sounded so good. It doesn't matter. Is it truth? The truth will set you free. Like I said before, truth sets free. Gives you a clear countenance. There's nothing to hide. You can look people in the eye. There's nothing to hide. They don't have to discover. There's nothing. Sometimes we think that we can hide. Sometimes we think we can put on a good front and everything is just fine. But just don't come too close. Just don't poke too hard. Just don't ask too many questions. And I'll be fine. And our countenance gets dark. But the truth sets us free. It brings God's approval. It brings the blessings of your authority. There's a trust there. They know that you're not going to pull something over their heads. They know that if they go up to your room, every drawer's open for them to look into. Every book on the shelf, they can pick up. Every dress in your closet, they can look at. It brings the blessings of your church leaders. Sometimes, let me put it this way. When I was 29 years old, I started thinking I wasn't going to get married. And so, talking to Mom and Dad, I asked them, well, it looks like God is just, marriage is not for me. It must be a different plan. So we started looking at options. I said, you know, you're not going to be around here all my life. I can't sponge off of you, and I don't want to sponge off of you. What profession should I start looking at? I need to be able to support myself. And they felt like it was time to move on. And I did. I had their trust and their blessing. They said, we want you to talk to the leaders of the church, see what they say. And at that time, we had decided on nursing. I had an interest in medical, and I thought it would be a good opportunity. That's something I could support myself. That's something that is needed on the mission field. And we had our reasons. And so I was able to go to the ministry and say, okay, what do you think? You know my life. We've lived here 10 years. What do you think? And I got a wholehearted blessing. And it surprised me. And I thought, well, because there was another girl in that church that was wanting to seek formal education, and she had gotten a no. And I had talked to one of the minister's wives, and she said, we know your life. We know that you are not flighty. We know that you're not swayed by this opinion and that opinion. And so this girl knew that I had talked to them. She goes, so what did they say to you? I said, well, I got a blessing. And her mouth fell open. She said, you did? And I said, yeah. She said, well, I can't believe it. They told me no. I said, oh. Why? Well, I don't know. Now, I did ask my minister's wife, if you do something like that for somebody else, you must go in the spirit of humility. It's all right to ask, but you must make sure you are not harboring a grudge or something in your heart other than sincerely wanting to know and being willing to be told, I can't tell you, have them tell you, I can't tell you all the details, but there are reasons that we are not allowing this or giving our blessing for this situation. And she, and I did ask her, and she said, well, this young girl she's blown about by every wind that comes around. You know, this is great, and this is great, and I hear this over there, and this is great. And there is no stable, she's not stable. So we can't give our blessing to something that would ruin her. Well, she went to college anyway. And it did ruin her. She might say, oh, I've got success. But I'm not sure how much of the success she really should have or want or be glad for, because it has consequences. And it brings respect and trust. And I think I've said that quite often, that honesty and truth brings respect and trust. When somebody trusts you, there is a respect and a trust built both ways. Truth and honesty do not fear light. But become more brilliant as the light grows stronger and brighter. I found this just a couple hours before I came here, and I thought I'd read it. It's character, but I think truth and honesty, integrity, can be put in the place of character. Character is something you build over time, over a life. Character determines your destiny. The process looks like this: your thoughts create your words. Your words create your actions. Your actions create your habits. Your habits create your character. And lastly, your character creates your destiny. I leave you with this quote: the circumstances amid which you live determine your reputation. The truth you believe determines your character. Reputation is what you are supposed to be. Character is what you are. Reputation is the photograph. Character is the face. Reputation comes over one from without. Character grows up from within. Reputation is what you have when you come in, when you come to a new community. Character is what you have when you go away. Reputation is made in a moment. Character is built for in a lifetime. Your reputation is learned in an hour. Your character doesn't come to light for a year. Reputation grows like a mushroom. Character grows like an oak. A single newspaper report gives you your reputation. A life of toil gives you your character. Reputation makes you rich or makes you poor. Character makes you happy or makes you miserable. Reputation is what men say about you on your tombstone. Character is what angels say about you before the throne of God. I thought that was very sobering. Truth and honesty is part of that. Truth and honesty is part of that. Light makes manifest what is true. And I don't just want to harp. There's more to character than just character. A stone can have character, but it still holds an element of darkness. It's not transparent. You can't see through it. It might be good for a foundation, but character without Christ is like a stone. It's good. Holds things together, holds things down, is fairly stable. But it still has an element of darkness. The light that is in you is darkness. How great is that darkness? But character, integrity, with the power of Christ, becomes a glorious thing. Do you want to turn off the lights for a minute? A diamond doesn't fear the light. It becomes something beautiful when the light is shown. Takes it into its heart, just like we take Christ's word into our heart, but it gives back out. That's what our life can be like. Go ahead and turn the lights back on. A diamond is clear. It's pure. Diamond experts say they have personality. They study each one. God is our diamond expert. We are His diamonds, His jewels. But a diamond doesn't shine for itself. It's enjoyed by others. Character isn't for us. It isn't just for us. It's not just for us to take in, but it's to give out. The power of a life of integrity is possible for each one of us. Not in our own strength, though. It's Christ. By God's grace, power, and Spirit, we can have integrity. Some people say there's six tests for a diamond. Maybe there's six tests for integrity. A diamond is the hardest substance known, 85 times harder than any other known substance. Test number two, they are unspoiled by alkalis or acids. Integrity keeps itself, whether you're around caustic people or happy people. Number three, a diamond can stand intense heat and still be uninjured. Integrity can withstand temptations and keep itself pure. A diamond disperses light. It gives. It doesn't just take in. That's why it makes it so beautiful. It breaks it up. It makes light even more beautiful. White is light. We see light as white or whatever. A diamond breaks it up and gives it dimensions and color. Integrity does the same thing for our lives. A diamond refracts. It has the power to take light and shine it back out. It just doesn't take it in and absorb it. And, yeah, it gives back out. A diamond is pure, and that's why it can give back out. The purity of a diamond makes it more costly, or it makes it useless, and it's used for drilling purposes. We can try in our own strength to be a diamond. We can try in our own strength for integrity, like I said. But by asking, acting, and as you heard on Tuesday morning, I think, patient in continuance, God is able to make something glorious out of your lives. It's not by might, nor by power, but by my Spirit, says the Lord. We can't do it on our own. If we try to pull ourselves up and say, okay, now I'm going to have integrity, it's not going to work. It's Christ. But God also says in Philippians 2:13, for it is God who worketh in you both to will and to do. It is a choice. Character, integrity, honesty, truth is a choice. God's in there with you. As we heard on Monday, David violated a code of honor. God's with you in the battle. He's not going to leave you. He says, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. It's us who drop our sword and say it's too hard, not him. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and keep on knocking, and it will be opened. He has it all there for you. A life of integrity is possible. This is one of my favorite verses. I think, and in closing, this is what I'm going to give you. Now unto him who is able to keep you from falling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. Jude 1:24, he is able to keep you from falling. It is possible. God bless you. Let's pray. Dear Father, thank you for today. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for all that you are willing to give us, all that you're willing to do for us, Father. Thank you that you do not leave us or forsake us. Thank you that you give us truth, give us honesty. And, oh, Father, I do pray for these girls at these crossroads, at these times in life which are so precious and so fleeting. Father, I pray that you would give them grace, bless and keep them, watch over them, guide them, and give them a vision for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.